Hey everyone, welcome to Food Not Bombs podcast. This is your host, Daniel, and this podcast is a space to get to know some of the volunteers and the regulars in our F&B community. So listeners, we'd really appreciate any feedback. So please let us know on our Instagram, which is F&B Sid, will be in the show notes. And today we're joined by local volunteer Matt, getting to know his story, how he got into the group, and keen to talk shop. So Matt, thanks for making the time.
Thanks for having me.
The first question is, how did you come across Food Not Bombs? And I'm kind of trying to recollect my memories of when I first saw you. And I'm thinking it was maybe in my first or second session, maybe 4 months back. But yeah, tell us, how did you come across it?
So my first time sort of encountering Food Not Bombs was in January. I was walking from the train station to the cinema, the Newtown Dendy Cinema, and I was I don't know, I'll just tell it like a story, I guess, because it is kind of like vivid in my mind. Like I was really hungry at the time. I was like fasting, and I sort of like wanted to take my mind off of the hunger by going to a movie, and but I knew like on the way that I was gonna like have a lot of temptation to eat because of like the stores on King Street, the restaurants and stuff. So I was like kind of bracing myself for that, and then like before I even like hit King Street, basically. No, and what I was kind of saying to myself was like, you're already spending like $12 on a movie. Like you don't need to spend another $15 on like a burrito or anything. Like, and I was kind of using the cost argument to kind of try to keep myself on the fast. But then I hear someone at the station say, "Free food." And I was like, damn, they got me.
Love it. Yes.
Yeah. So I had like all these I remember like eating a lot of fried, not like baked potatoes, and like I had like three donuts, and I just like I really enjoyed that, I have to say. And I think maybe it
Yes.
was the end. You know, when you're really hungry and you eat something and it just tastes so good, like
Yeah,
even if
gold.
it's really like plain food, like eating really delicious food in a fasted state, I think it like kind of left an indelible memory on me that kind of, yeah, that was what initially made me want to come back. And I was just like coming to serves, getting food for a while. And then finally I saw like a wheat paste poster for calling for volunteers. And yeah, the rest is history. It's been coming up on a year now.
Yeah, wow. Cool. So shout out to whoever shouted free food, and really nice to know that actually it worked from afar and lured you in your hungry state and kept that memory of the deliciousness of the food and the wheat pacing as well. So that's really cool that the kind of local attempts that we make to spread the word ha actually really worked for you. And you're here and you've been volunteering. So what kind of helped you decide to volunteer? So you saw the wheat pasting, the poster that was wheat pasted. How'd that go? What was the story from there?
It's hard to kind of recollect exactly what my motivation or motivations were at the time. I was definitely I was kind of motivated partially by the fact that I would still get to eat the food, right? Like the volunteers get to eat the food too. And so for me, it was kind of like, well, if I'm just hanging out there and eating the food, I might as well like offer to pick something up or take something to a car or take something from a car. And I don't remember if I like actually started helping out before I was like formally introduced to the, volunteering, but yeah, it was definitely like it doesn't seem like much of a step up considering that I wouldn't have to sacrifice actually getting to eat the food. And
Yes.
then also I think I liked the idea of making some kind of like anti-war statement by like giving people food as opposed to, yeah, I'm not really like a protest kind of person. I find protests, it's just not my kind of like, it's too high energy for me, you know? I'm a low energy guy. I don't like to talk very loudly, and chanting has never really done it for me. Like I always kind of feel like it's a little bit weird. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. So it was like a form of disrupting the system that fit you and your preference. And it was like one of the ways to still deliver the message. And the fact that volunteers also eat the food makes it a like smaller step to like actually participate, rather than having to like commit an entire afternoon or put in that much effort. It's like quite easy as a start to join, to participate.
Yeah, and there's never any like expectation that you like that you don't have to volunteer regularly. And in fact, I found so I initially was sort of putting my hand up to volunteer at Serves, but then I just kind of started like showing up and just helping out. Carrying stuff to and from the serve location and kind of letting the people who've actually put up their hands to volunteer like do the actually dispensing the food, I'm like on the chat, the organizing chat, and but I'm not necessarily like signed up to volunteer. That was kind of the situation for a long time, and it still kind of is how my level of involvement is just like what I feel like doing at any given time. I never feel, or like I rarely feel a sense of like obligation.
Yeah, super flexible and no need to kind of let people know too far in advance as well. I think that's a thing that might be different to for listeners who may be experienced with volunteering in other organizations or kind of typical ch charity hierarchies that you need that time commitment and you need to let people know in advance. But I think there's a context where even if you are not officially on the serve kind of role, you can still help out, as you've mentioned, with carrying things or setting up the table, and like little things around the outside of the actual dispensing of the food. And so what then, I'm assuming the food is within this reason, but what keeps you volunteering?
Yeah, well, I think it's all of those things that I just said, but it's also I really enjoy hanging out with the people who volunteer at the serves. I've learned a lot from these people just through conversations about anarchism, which is something that wasn't even really on my radar before. You know, I've never really been like a political activist, as you could probably guess when I was saying like I'm not into protesting, but like I've never really felt like I call myself an inactivist. Like I don't wanna I don't wanna like do anything that I don't wanna do. Which seems like obvious, like why would anyone do anything they don't want to do? But people do it all the time. It's like it's kind of what civilization is built on, is doing things you don't want to do. And that's like reinforced by lots of hierarchies and obligation and sort of social shaming and all this stuff. And so yeah, learning about anarchism has been a real game changer for me, you know, like in sort of understanding what I want my life to be. I think talking to people who are very committed to whatever like revolutionary type activities and just kind of asking myself like, well, where do I fit in like an anarchist community? Like and that's been an interesting process for me. Also just the fact that a lot of these people are like voluntarily underemployed. I just like these types of people. And I just vibe with them, and I don't really get to encounter them much in my day-to-day life, especially not in my work life, because obviously those types of people wouldn't be found in workplaces. So yeah, I really enjoy just like hanging out and not like being a productive member of society, although this is a kind of productivity in itself, and I have issues with that, but it's like not, you could say, like conventional productivity.
Yeah, love it. It's like a form of I think some people differentiate labor with work, and I forgot exactly the definition, but I get your point of it's voluntary. It's not like you are kind of forced to earn a living to participate. And yeah, super cool how it was like the first time that like anarchism was really within your thoughts and reflections, and I can hear them. And it's really cool that it's had an effect, and you've had the time to reflect on what you want like life to be like for you, how you fit in with the kind of ideals or the principles of anarchism. I'm keen to hear a little more, because I know there's people, even myself included, where having the actions of Food Not Bombs and the space of it, that's when we can really start considering and maybe learning more and seeing what else we can do within anarchist principles. What's the impact? You mentioned it's been a game changer. How has it kind of impacted your life so far in you know the past few months of reflections?
Well, I mean, it's been a whole year, really. But yeah, so over the previous, so it started, I kind of started getting involved in early 2024, 2022 and 2023 was, you know, a time where I had a lot of free time on my hands, because of COVID. And during that time, I was reading a lot, and one author that I read kind of his whole works was Nietzsche. It was for the first time. Like, I'm in my 30s, and I was reading him for the first time and feeling like, man, I'm kind of late to the party. This is something you typically do, like, in your very early 20s or like teens. He just seems like someone who's very much like appealing to young men or young people, I should say, but maybe more men. And I was kind of like very much on a sort of Nietzschean kick. And then the introduction of like the anarchist theory, I tried to find a sort of a bridge between what I had been sort of the conclusions I had come to from reading Nietzsche and sort of where anarchism is. And the bridge that I found was the Ego and Its Own by Max Stirner, who I found out actually was there's like a lot of controversy about whether Nietzsche like didn't acknowledge Stirner's influence on him, but there's definitely a lot of similarity between the two. And so it kind of was a bit of a no-brainer for me to say like, oh yeah, so I'm an egoist anarchist, because that is kind of like how a Nietzschean would kind of engage with political life. And so that's been fairly simple, like making that sort of realization. But then the difficulty has been figuring out whether I can re reconcile my own sort of dedication to following my own desires and my own self-interest with a collective anarchist group, or whether that's just fundamentally the two are completely incompatible, and I'm just sort of limiting myself through participation in collective goals and action.
Yeah, super interesting. The philosophy, the kind of existentialism of Nietzsche and the two forces playing a role at the same time of the kind of egoist strand of anarchism, and maybe I'll name like social anarchism, and seeing how like the working within a collective hopefully can reconcile some of your or suit some of your own like self-interests at the same time as working collaboratively. That's super interesting how you reconciled the two kind of strands and came over from the philosophy side of the world. And yeah, I don't think you're the only one that I guess missed out on philosophy in your early 20s, speaking from personal experience. So that's really cool. And looking at then at the group kind of the collective, what have been some of the things that you've observed as kind of maybe challenges encountered by either yourself or the group, and how you saw these challenges kind of managed, responded to?
Yeah, well, the first thing that I would say kind of before I speak to that is like no, nothing's perfect. I don't think anyone in the group would say that the group has perfectly reconciled like the ideals of anarchism with the practical sort of imperatives of doing this kind of work in a neoliberal society. There's going to be a lot of friction, let's say. So the challenges kind of from the outside are going to typically have to do with issues with like resources and maybe even like challenges from the community about whether it's like the pacifism or the veganism, or I don't know, various things might be rubbing up against the mores of the external kind of society. But I would say like the more pressing issues have to do with like the internal dynamics of the group. A lot of this stuff that I would kind of point to has already been discussed by Ezra in his episode. I feel like that's kind of another reason why I don't want to like dwell on this for too long, is because I think he's already done a really good job of covering it. But like one thing that he mentioned was there's a kind of there's a separation between the volunteers and the regulars. I don't know if he actually said that specifically, but he referred to like a clickiness that can emerge, that some people have talked about. And I think from my perspective, one aspect of the group that is interesting and is, I would say, like pretty typical of Food Not Bombs in general, would be this designation of the people who do the work of like setting everything up and getting the food and cooking the food and everything as volunteers. Like I read somewhere, or someone told me, that some Food Not Bombs groups don't use the term volunteer, and there's no distinction made between, the people who are kind of making it happen and the community, because of this kind of mutual aid ideal of like not making a separation between like the helper and the helped. And I don't know like how much of just the linguistic designation of like volunteers as opposed to regulars or the community is actually perpetuating a kind of barrier between the two. But it is certainly my observation of at Serves that there's very little interaction between the volunteers and the community. There will be like the community will often say like, thank you, you're doing great work, and the volunteers will be like, yeah, it's kind of like this kind of, oh yeah, don't thank us too effusively because this is mutual aid. Like, but certainly like there's very little just like into cross-pollination between the community and the volunteers. The volunteers will kind of hang out together at the serve. And this is probably even more pronounced in the new serve location at Camperdown Park, where we're all just kind of like sitting near the serve table, and it looks kind of like we're just having a picnic, and I can understand why that would be if you're just like someone coming and getting food, or someone walking past. It's like I can see why you would feel like it would be hard to just make that walk, make that sort of cross that divide and like start just interacting with these people, because you might feel like you're not a quote unquote volunteer, You don't have that sort of status of like you can go behind the counter, so to speak, to use a kind of commercial analogy. So that's the first thing I would say. Would you like to speak to that at all, Dan? Or
Totally. And like you said, kind of building on what Ezra talked about, and I think a couple of others, and hopefully in my episode, if I my memory actually works occasionally. So I think I also mentioned I definitely can see, like, when we zoom out, that there is the kind of divide still of volunteers on one side of the table and then the rest of the public on the other side. And as cool as it looks, like, as a kind of communal picnic and the kind of casual nature, I think there's kind of, I'm not sure, like, my mind goes to if there's maybe skill sets or like tools that we can share and raise awareness of when it comes to, like, communicating. I know, like, I deal with social anxiety, and it's not easy to build relationships with strangers or people you've just met, and that goes across, like, with everyone. But I think there's potential for building the personal relationships with some of the regulars. I saw a good example last Thursday where there was a lady who comes regularly. I don't want to name in case she doesn't want her name on here, but they were asking for help for their bike pedal. And so that was, like, an opportunity for, like, there were a couple of us that joined and just helped out, like, take the bike pedal out and figure out how to use a tool. And that was like, oh, cool. That's like a moment of solidarity, like, in action. And I think there can be more opportunities for communicating, for bridging the kind of gap, crossing the divide. And yeah, maybe reflecting on our use of the term volunteer would help facilitate that. What are your thoughts?
I agree with the definitely what you were saying about the social anxiety. In my experience of like interacting, especially with people who are the more vulnerable members of society, say, they do feel almost like untouchables. In the Indian caste system, like the untouchables were the ones like at the bottom who just like couldn't really weren't even allowed to interact with anyone, any other sort of social caste. And even though we don't have that sort of formalized social hierarchy, it still exists. And I think informally there still is a kind of like even maybe even among the volunteers, there's still a residual kind of what's the word? Like just an aversion to people who are at the bottom of the social hierarchy. And maybe that's something that people who do charity. I'm not saying that this is the case, but in Food Not Bombs, but I do feel very strongly that one of the complexes of people who are very active in like social causes is maybe deep down they feel like they still have a kind of elitist attitude. And they're like atoning for that almost through their activism. And so I don't know, maybe that's something that I don't know if you're listening and you're someone who does volunteer work, that's something you can reflect on. I don't know if I personally feel that way so much. Because I'm not an activist, so I clearly don't feel a need to atone, or maybe I do feel a need, but it's not something that I actually that I do. I just sort of feel guilty in silence.
Yeah, the feeling guilty internally. But yeah, I think maybe there's opportunities and spaces to have these reflections. And yeah, I think it is a deep reflection that deserves the time. And maybe they can be facilitated in whether that's meetings or through these podcasts. I know, like, if listeners are keen to discuss maybe with one of us, I know I can put my hand up to just hold some space to listen, because it can be quite a challenging self-reflection on the why and why we volunteer, and seeing how our self-interests are a part of that picture, not to kind of shame them, but to like make space for them and seeing how they play out, so that we can, for the goal of addressing the kind of divide that we have. And yeah, if there's kind of aversions to making the connections, and that's something that we can definitely improve on. So yeah, I appreciate you raising this. I think it's an important issue that needs to be discussed for the better of all of us. And then looking at ideas for addressing this, and also like looking forward, using your utopian imagination, what would be your dream?
Well, I am definitely a utopian dreamer, so this is kind of my time to shine. I think for me, like, what I and this is kind of going back to what I was saying about, the tensions between like an egoist and a anarchist community is like, do you stick around and try to change people's perspective to make the community more aligned with your own values and your own interests and desires? Or do you suppress your desires strategically in the interest of the social connections and, essentially, and there is like this idea that Stirner has called like the union of egoists, which is the idea that an egoist could still kind of mute or kind of not insist upon certain preferences that they might have just to get along with a group, because they judge that the net benefit, that doing so would be a net benefit, essentially. Do you kind of follow what I'm where I'm
Yeah, like
yeah.
mutually beneficial for all parties, and it's like reciprocal rather than like, I don't know, zero sum kind of idea. If it benefits you, then it's not going to benefit me. It's more like, if it benefits you, it's also going to benefit me. Is that?
Well, it's more like, maybe I'll use an example, right? So, like, in this Food Not Bombs chapter, there is a decision has been made that all the food will be vegan, right? And I read on like the Wikipedia page that that is pretty standard for Food Not Bombs chapters, but not universal, because like some chapters, especially if they're in communities where the community doesn't like vegan food, like I think one example in the Wikipedia was like South Carolina in the US, which is like a deep red state. I know that because I've been there, and they like meat, and they like large portions of it. So maybe like setting up some kind of vegan only stand in, whatever city in South Carolina they, I think it was Arlington maybe. That's not going to like serve the community, you know? So they have like brisket and ribs and steaks at their serves, you know? And I was reading that at sort of preparing for this interview, just wanting to like know some more about Food Not Bombs. And I came across that and I was like, oh, wow. And it really kind of struck me like, that would be awesome, you know, because I eat meat and I would love to be like eating like brisket sliders. Which isn't to say I don't like vegan food. In fact, I feel like both would be great. And perhaps both having vegan and non-vegan options would kind of be more pluralistic, like because the, you know, this is my, again, this is my ego expressing itself. This is what I want. And maybe this is even what I think is right for the community, but in any case, it's what I want. But I understand that we're in Newtown and that a lot of the volunteers are vegan, and some volunteers feel very, very strongly about it. And I'm not going to be like at a meeting and saying like, hey guys, how about we get some brisket going at the next serve, you know? Because I know that if I were to even say that, even just to like express the fact that I would like that, maybe some members of the group or some volunteers would like feel kind of alienated from me, or I would be alienating myself from them. So I kind of keep that part of myself on the down low. But maybe, yeah, this podcast is a chance for me to finally like do a mask off and say, I wanted brisket all along. But no, I think, look, I think that any volunteer in the group wouldn't find what I'm saying particularly offensive. But what I would say is, I would like to see, and all of that was just to kind of preface what I would like to see the group, the turn I would like to see the group take would be not necessarily to have like the cook, because there is typically like one cook that happens per serve at like one kitchen. And I'm not suggesting that like the capacity should be split between like making vegan and non-vegan meals. But what I am kind of proposing is that we don't just have one cook location. It's more like you might have like a main cook where it's all vegan, sort of to reflect the general consensus of the group. But we should also, I think, welcome people to bring their own, cook their own food. And perhaps even like if someone were to source some food from a small business, like someone who wants to eat meat could like go to a butcher and be like, you throwing anything away? Like, and if so, they could, you know, put it in the chat, say like, oh, this guy's throwing out or threw out like all these ribs, and then someone could put their hand up and say, I've got a kitchen. If someone can like drive those ribs over to me, then I'll cook them up and bring them to serve. Like, and it'll be more decentralized in the sense that like different people are doing their own cooks and their own, yeah, cooks, and maybe they'll come together for that single serve, you know, with the people who are cooking the vegan food, and there's this like sort of spread. Or we could even have like multiple cooks going, like different serves going, like and different little groups within the groups, like different cells could like, you know, say, oh, this is a good time of week for me to have like a little like breakfast or something. And I don't know, I just like the idea of that. It reminds me of this quote that I actually wrote down because I wanted to say it in this podcast, which is a quote from Gilles Deleuze, who's a French post-structuralist philosopher, and he's talking about groups that are not like sort of organized. It's more of like an organic, he would call it an encounter. And the quote is, he's comparing these groups to a gang, right? And he says, quote, "What is good in a gang in principle is that each goes about his business while encountering others. Each brings in his loot, and a becoming is sketched out. A block starts moving, which no longer belongs to anyone, but is between everyone, like a little boat which children let slip and lose and is stolen by others." So I think that kind of speaks to this like the dividing of the loot is an idea that I like, you know, where we get food and maybe the drivers will like distribute it all over the city to people's little, you know, flat kitchens, and they're cooking different things up that they might want to eat, and then it all kind of comes together in a public place, and it's like the sharing of the loot, you know, like a gang would do. And I don't know, I when I was reflecting on that and I was imagining that, it kind of it really excited me, and it made me think, you know, this is what I would like society to be like, just people kind of people like operating like gangs, not in a criminal way, but just in this kind of like scrappy kind of everyone's out for himself, but like will sort of make common cause when it suits him, you know? That's like the classic union of egoists ideal, I would say.
Yeah, the kind of rhizome is another term within the, from my memory, Deleuze's kind of theories. And I think there are some concepts within anarchism of the kind of temporary groups that form according to a task or a goal or environment, and then they kind of disband after that goal is done, and then they reband again if needed for another goal. So that idea of the flexible non-hierarchical group and sharing the loot or sharing the resources kind of equally amongst members, I think that can expand some of the things that we do. I think that the main concept, and I appreciate you being honest as well. I think that's important to have a space to just like express your thoughts, and then having the I think that the principle of whether or not we have it as a non-vegan or vegan, I think the principle of expanding the cook locations where there's capacity, and welcoming people to bring their own loot or cook their own food, and even just having maybe spaces to discuss these ideas. And yeah, I think it's a good reflection on the North Carolina Food Not Bombs, where the community has specific kind of needs and considerations, and it was kind of a grassroots perspective of, hey, this community, like vegan food just would not work in this context. So what would work is a mixture of foods, and how can we do that in a way that still kind of has some principles of food not bombs in terms of you know, not or saving food that would be otherwise thrown away. So yeah, that's some utopian dreaming here, Matt. I'm keen to see the feedback and the reflections. I think there's some points that we can definitely take. Moving to people who I was gonna say regulars, but like people we work with or people we serve food to, people who take our food, that's kind of including us. But in particular, focusing on the communities that are marginalized, are living rough, and that's generally who we want to reach out to, in particular with cost of living in Sydney, in Gadigal, that there are going to be more people really living it rough. So what would you say are some of the causes of the problems of homelessness, the problems of lower kind of socioeconomic kind of statuses of people, and how does Food Not Bombs kind of address or acknowledge these causes?
Yeah, so I think it's pretty obvious to me, at least, that the main cause of homelessness in Australia, given that it's, we have social housing, it's there's wait lists and everything. There's very few people that are ineligible for social housing. I know that like certain sex offenses make you ineligible, but most people can qualify for social housing if they, are at that sort of level of economic need. People who would, honestly, I struggle to kind of understand why a person would not. I'm sure there's like institutional barriers. Like I think anyone who's ever dealt with Centrelink can appreciate how frustrating it is and inaccessible. So, sure, I can see why there are people who wouldn't take up that program. And also like maybe the social housing isn't available in the area where your like family and friends and community is. I know like especially for like the Indigenous community, they want to be around like Redfern, Waterloo, those kinds of areas. So to say, oh yeah, we have an opening for you out west, like maybe that would, on paper, it's like they've been given the option to have housing, but in reality, it's like, how can you expect these people to be like completely socially isolated? But yeah, I would say like because of the certain level of social services that we have, the main reason why a person will be like living on the street is like severe mental illness, schizophrenia, and that is that's pretty apparent, like when you kind of, I don't know, in my interactions with homeless people, I've often kind of felt like they're struggling, they're living a struggle that I can't see, and it's just manifesting in like their poor personal hygiene and these outward circumstances are just like, I can't even really penetrate and see what's going on inside of their minds. That's like how they would think of the world and how they would perceive me, like wanting to talk to them or wanting to give them food. Like it's a mystery to me because I've never been in that situation. And then there's obviously addiction, which is, I think, related to loneliness a lot of the time. That sort of isolation can feed addiction. So it's just a bad situation, and I don't propose to have the answers to it. But one thing that I would say is how I've always kind of conceptualized the model that I would use to fight homelessness would be to have like kind of a one-stop shop to take care of like the needs of the homeless population, not just like food-wise, although that is something, but it's not their only need, and it maybe isn't even their primary need. But also, I feel like laundry and like bathing, giving them fresh, clean clothes, or like cleaning their crusty clothes, like in like high intensity washing machines. And while they were like waiting for that, personally, this might seem kind of silly to people who aren't a part of this community, but I am a big fan of sauna. And I feel like if we had like a center where the down and out people in our community could go to, like, get their clothes washed, and while they're waiting for that, have a sauna, and then have some food. And maybe if there's other people there, they could have a conversation and just hang out, like just like a one-stop shop for just getting them not necessarily back on their feet, like in a sort of holistic long-term sense, but just getting them sort of feeling a bit better, and getting them sort of fresh is the word that comes to mind. Obviously, that would be very demanding in terms of resources, but I think the overall social effect of it would be one that I would be willing to contribute my taxes to towards. I don't know. Does that sound like kind of unrealistic?
You've claimed the utopian dreamer status already, Matt. So no, it's definitely within the realms of what can be out there. I'm not sure if you know the Wednesday night lights at Addison Road. They have every Wednesday at Addie Road Community Centre free meals, and they've got street side medics, like a mobile medical service. They've got some I think distribution of free clothes. I'm pretty sure they have a laundry as well. So this is like one example of your utopia in action. And I think there can be more of that, and maybe we can do a bit more of it. I guess if a listener hasn't heard about it, they can check it out and also recommend for anyone if they have a conversation with someone who may benefit if they haven't heard about it. So yeah, that there is that.
Well, one thing that I would, I mean, that's great. I hadn't heard of that, but that's awesome. Could use a sauna, but we're getting there.
Oh yeah, sure.
but I'd like to see this as like a mobile setup. I could imagine like one big kind of bus that would that you could move all over Sydney, or a fleet of buses really that would have all of these services in a mobile unit. Because yeah, like Marrickville, that's going to service like that specific community, but there's lots of communities, and I think they tend to sort of congregate and become more concentrated in like dense urban areas. But still, yeah, I think mobility would be key, and having the ability to go to areas where there is a need.
Yeah, totally. I think that's also a consideration that we're having with creating a new group like Food Not Bombs in Western Sydney, for instance, because there is a lot of need in there, rather than having all the kind of services for homeless people in like inner city, inner west. That mobility is needed. That kind of links back into maybe how it can be difficult for, say, I'm thinking single mum in a precarious situation, like low job insecurity, and all their families is in a particular area, and but the social housing might be in another area. So I think that's a consideration, the lo location to their support networks. Yeah, to round off the chat, it's been insightful and very awesome to hear some of your ideas. Don't often get this opportunity to deep dive into how to make the world better. But to round off for listeners who might be interested in checking out a serve, volunteering, maybe taking that first step, and also people who are currently volunteering, or taking our food. I don't know the word now to use instead of volunteering, but who are participating in the community. What are some messages that you'd like to send maybe to the people who are curious to do a bit more, or to check out a serve for the first time, and then people already kind of rocking up to serves?
Yeah, so I don't think there's any better thing to say to the people who haven't come along yet than what we say to everyone who walks past, which is free food, free donuts. Like,
Okay.
it's all right there, man. Like, if I think, and they're not just like, oh, maybe I can elaborate on one point, which maybe the listener wouldn't be able to understand, but someone walking past a serve stand would, which is the donuts are not just like the crappy donuts you get at Coles. These are like bougie ass artisanal donuts from Grumpy Donuts in Camperdown. Shout out to Grumpy. Love the work you're doing. And I especially love the boysenberry. So thank you. And yeah.
Yeah.
They're amazing. And then so to the and to the current volunteers, I'm gonna just continue to use the nomenclature, but to the current volunteers, I want to, oh, I'll just, I don't know if I'll say anything like in terms of, directives or anything, but I want to say thank you to all of you because you've really enriched my life. And you're just my kind of people. And it's great to meet people who you feel that way about, maybe not everyone we see eye to eye on everything. That's always going to be the case, politically or whatever. But, the ability to cut through that and just be like, hell yeah, you're all right. I feel welcomed, and I hope that I make you feel welcomed.
Love that. So, fellow comrades, community members, participants, cooperators, I know, fellow burglars with loot, volunteers, we'll figure out a word, but that's a touching ending and says a lot coming from tongue in cheek here, an egoist if they're saying something like that. So, Matt, it's been a pleasure chatting with you. I'm keen to eat more bougie artisanal donuts together and have these chats, and definitely has inspired some thoughts in my head. Is there anything that we've missed though in this chat before we round off?
No, I think that's a good place to end. Thanks again for having me on the pod.
Absolutely. Thank you.